Hello, welcome to Motor City Metrics bonus pod for the week. We're not going to have a normal pod here. We should be live on YouTube and X. One of the few times we're going live on X here. And should be a short show. Really main focus will be on the 13 position players that we know are going north with the team. This afternoon, the Tigers announced, let me see if I can pull up the tweet here.
A bevy of moves.
Yes. let me see here. The Tigers have announced the following roster moves. They optioned Ryan Kreidler and Akil Baddoo to AAA Toledo. Justin Henry Molloy will not be making the team. He was reassigned to minor league camp. And then Tigers now have 31 players remaining in camp after those moves. Let me see here. We'll pull up the other moves they made this morning. And then this morning, they got rid of a few pitchers. They got rid of Trey Wingenter, Andrew Vasquez. They got sent to AAA Toledo, Anthony Benboom. No surprise there. He'll probably be the backup to Dangler in Toledo. And then Keston Hiura, who had a pretty good spring training. He's being sent down. And then Bly Madras and Ryan Vallade, which I don't think is a surprise to anyone. Going back to the players that are somewhat of a surprise, are you surprised at all at Ryan Kreidler and Akil Baddoo being optioned back down?
You know, it's an interesting day. It's always, you know, that day that's pretty sad for a lot of players. But, you know, everybody who got sent back down, I think, has a purpose behind why they were sent where they were sent, right? I mean, some of the guys are just org filler, and we knew that was going to happen. Other players are jockeying for position, for over the long term with the Tigers. Ryan Kreidler, you know, he gave the organization part of a double whammy, right? He's had a very nice spring, and he's playing a position where a rather deeply unpopular veteran is struggling. So that was always going to be a big topic of conversation among fans who, you know, whether they know or don't know about, you know, how much stock to put in spring training stats. Facts are Ryan Kreidler was hitting 350 and he's a good glove man. So people wondering, well, why are we going to watch Javier Baez, you know, hit 189 and flail at a lot of strikes. And it's understandable to have that conversation. But I think that in the long run, we knew, mostly, you know, many of us knew that Javier Baez was going to get a first crack at this job here in the spring, and they're going to give him as much rope as they possibly can to draw the talent that he has shown in past years back out of him and get something out of their investment. Ryan Kreidler is a nice little insurance ticket in case something happens to Baez or if he's just hitting so poorly that it's untenable. Everybody else, you know, Edys Leonard, kind of talk about the same thing, really, that you talk about Kreidler. Had a very nice spring, only enhanced his position probably within the organization, certainly in the eyes of many fans. That's a good thing. And then finally, Akil Baddoo, definitely worth note. Obviously, the man has struggled for a couple of years. A lot of times, a lot of people say they got to get rid of him. It's a make-or-break time. He's got to go. He has a couple of options left, so there's no reason to get rid of him. He has talent. He's going to go down to Toledo, see what he can work on, see if he, at this age, I think he's 25, if it comes around, he's worth keeping on a roster, but it was no big shock to see him sent to Toledo.
Yeah, on the Ryan Kreidler thing, I didn't realize he was already 26. In my head, he was still like 24. I mean, he's getting up there in age. It's almost like I want him to get the shot, because It for me, it's make or break for him. Like, if he doesn't perform this season, I mean, his baseball career is probably dwindling. But I mean, this spring he showed, I don't want to say he showed some power, but he definitely had some hard hits. He could hit him into the gaps.
2 years ago, he had his best season, and I saw him play several games here in Des Moines when they came to play the Iowa Cubs. He showed some power and he showed some, you know, a bit of pop throughout that season. So it's in there. It's just the last two seasons he's been bedeviled by injuries and hasn't hit that well. Whether it's, and I think, you know, one of it was a hand injury, which obviously affects your hitting. So his career is kind of stalled due to the injuries the last couple of seasons. This could be the year, if it's going to come together, that maybe it will. And you know, will he get much of an opportunity this season? My hunch is that if he goes into April and, you know, comes out of April hitting well, and the club itself, the Tigers, are mired in the bottom 10 in offense again, like they were last year, they're going to make some changes to try to spark the offense. And maybe him, and the same goes for Justin Henry Molloy, those could be their first couple of options.
Yeah, and then Akil Baddoo, I think he just has so many tools that the organization wants to hold on to. I mean, 10%+ walk percentage, can steal a base, can play the outfield at a proficient level, better than Justin Henry Molloy. No question. And then a lot of people in the comments of this Twitter thread, free J-Hen, free J-H-M. Are you surprised that he didn't make it? I can probably pull up his fan graphs real quick, but seems like he was striking out a lot, and he wasn't hitting the ball as hard as and consistently as I would have liked to see this spring.
Are you talking about Molloy?
Yeah, Molloy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he was okay. He started. He had a couple of good moments here and there, but he wasn't consistent. But that's okay. Not everybody. You know, Spencer Torkelson is hitting a .105 right now, right? So, what are you going to do? But I think Molloy, if we go back a year, we see the Tigers were ultra patient with him. They didn't really push him along. They didn't bring him up to the majors. He was hitting almost, 400 in April, right? And he was crushing the ball, had a slump, but also had some good, good stretches through the year. But the Tigers remained extremely patient and just let him sit there. And now they've sent him back. My hunch is, as I noted a bit ago, if they are struggling in May and he is lighting it up again, I doubt they'll be patient with him again. I think they will find a way to put the offense into the lineup and just figure out a way to hide his glove in any way they can.
Yeah. I can't see who he replaces on this club unless like Gio or Shella is an absolute stinker. Then maybe they just eat the 1.5 and have Vierling and Abanez over at third and Jay Hank and DH and play left. I don't know. Him not being viable in the field at all really just stinks. Then I think these three names are probably the biggest names. Do you have any thoughts on Keston Hiura being sent down? He showed some pop this spring, but
well, he certainly hit the ball well. He's got the pedigree from the draft pedigree. I think he was number 9 overall pick from the Brewers once upon a time. Has shown power in the majors and in AAA, but he was striking out at something like a 40% clip. It's hard to trust a guy like that until he shows a long stretch of at bats where he's, let's say, at least under 30%. I mean, not that that's any great shakes, but that'd be a hell of a lot better than 40%. So he got sent down. I wouldn't doubt he has some kind of outs in his contract where he can go and pursue something better if the Tigers don't have him on the major league roster. I haven't seen that. It's just a hunch. So who knows? I mean, if he gets off to a good start at AAA, like let's say like JD Martinez way back in the day when he hit his 10 home runs in 7 games or whatever that was, 17 home runs in 10 games or something bizarre like that. If he gets off to a smoking hot start, maybe he hits his way and they have to find a spot for him in Detroit. Who knows? Anything could happen. But it was a good move to bring him up. I mean, to bring him in aboard because he's got some ability and he's shown in spring that he can hit. So we'll just have to see how things shake out, and injuries could hit as well where they need him.
Yeah. Tyler Barker brings up a good point here. People act like not making the opening day roster is the end of the world. AJ Hinch has already talked about how all the guys on the 40, they've been told, even if they're in Toledo, to be ready to be in the majors. That's definitely true for the pitchers. So, I mean, all these guys we've talked about could easily have 250 plate appearances for the Tigers this year.
Oh, no question.
Then, yeah, again, who is Kesson Hira make the team over? I don't think anyone, I don't want to say I'm worried about Torque, but he's popped out so many times this spring. It's just frustrating to watch. Like, I'm getting annoyed. If he brings that pop out rate over to the regular season, I'm going to be even more infuriated. He has way too much power to just be having lazy pop outs to the first base side.
Yeah, you'd like to see a little more. I mean, there's no question. You really can't worry about it until the games are real. But, you know, he's shown this in the past where he has just had very quiet, lethargic springs. And this is, you know, just putting more evidence that this is not his time of year for production. He's working on stuff, I'm assuming. But, again, we'll just have to see when they show up in Chicago on the 28th. The proof will be in the pudding if this is just a blip.
And then I guess while we're on position players, Parker Meadows mm-hmm. was having a good spring coming into today, having an even better spring after today. let me see here. Yeah, he had over a thousand OPS coming into today. He had another home run today. I think he had another hit on top of that. Made a great catch in the outfield, made it look effortless. AJ Hinch even joked on the broadcast saying that he'll probably tell Parker that he made the team after today. Yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on Parker Meadows going into the regular season?
Well, I do love hearing about the great catch, because defensively is where he's going to, you know, make his mark in the major leagues. I believe, I think he's going to be very good out there. I've watched him play enough times in person to see him make some incredible plays in center field, and he makes it look easy. I'm excited to see him hopefully stay healthy and patrol Comerica center field for a season and see what that looks like. Offensively, you know, again, I'm the first to knock spring training stats, either good or bad, right? But he has hit the ball well. The one thing I'll say, and I won't wax poetic about his great numbers too much, because again, they're spring training numbers, but he has been very steady this spring. You know, he hasn't had like an 0 for 15 in there that he had to come back from or anything. It just seems like he has steadily gotten on base, gotten hits, showed a little power pretty much for the whole month, which is pretty cool. So if he can just be, he doesn't have to be an offensive stud to be a contributor, but you know, that doesn't mean he can't be one. The guy's athletic. He can, you know, his legs are going to get him some hits and some extra bags. He has some power. If it can all come together and he's a 4-5 WAR player, that's really some great draft and development out of the second round.
Yeah. Part of my predictions for the season, this season, have to do with Parker Meadows, and I will not be surprised if he ends up leading this team in WAR, at least on the position mm-hmm. player side. Then we got how many more cuts will there be until the final roster is set? I think we're at 31 players now, so there's 5 pitchers left that need to be cut. And I guess we should go into that. Casey Mize, I mm-hmm. should have pulled up how well he did today. I think he did 4 2/3.
Yesterday, I think, yeah.
Or it was yesterday, yes. 4 2/3. Looked great. A lot of swing and miss. Fastball was still in the mid to high 90s going into the fourth inning. What are your thoughts on Casey Mize versus Reese Olson for, we assume, this last rotation?
Sure. Spot? Well, as someone, I've talked about Casey Mize many times over the years. But just for a quick recap, in case folks didn't listen back in the day, I always was worried about his fastball. I always felt it looked like a bit of a floater. I always felt like opposing teams never had very many uncomfortable at-bats against Casey Mize because he didn't work inside. He was way, way, way with his heater. And I always wondered if the fact that he was shut down the year before his big year at Auburn due to forearm strain that I just had to know a surgery was coming, right? And you just wondered prior to the surgery, how much was his fastball deteriorating due to the looming injury? We don't know. I'm not a doctor. I couldn't tell you. But we do know this. He's come out this spring and his fastball looks pretty sharp. And it looks like it's got some movement that it never used to have. It looks like it has a downward action that I, to the naked eye on television. And again, that's only worth so much, but still, it's all I got. But he's got a downward action to it that I really like the look of. If he can come out with an above average fastball to complement the other range of his pitches, I think we're going to see at least some part of the Casey Mize we hoped to see when he was drafted. Because I really believe his fastball, even in the year where he posted a decent ERA and made 20-something starts, I just never felt his fastball was very dominant. It wasn't a weapon for him. It was just something to kind of get by with. If his fastball is a weapon, that makes him a different pitcher. So I'm very anxious to see how this continues to evolve.
Yeah, I believe his induced vertical break on that fastball is above the mid-range now. I think it's getting up there in the 17 and 18 inch induced vertical break. So
you can see it.
It's becoming an above league average fastball, which, I mean, I don't want to say it has potential. We'll go with that. It has potential.
Yeah, you can't get too excited yet. It looks good. It's promising, if nothing else. And again, Casey Mize with an above average fastball that he can hunt outs with his fastball makes him a much different pitcher than what we saw, I think.
With that being said, though, Reese Olson has also had a pretty fine spring. Mm-hmm. And he pitched 140 innings last year, I believe.
Between
AAA and majors.
So
are you giving that fifth rotation spot to Casey Mize as of now, or are you sticking with Olsen? Olsen's been healthy, was reliable at the end of last year.
Do we think Kenta Maeda could be a really good long reliever?
I think Maeda and Flaherty could be both really good out of the pen, especially if Jack is throwing 97, 98 again.
You know, if especially early in the year, you know, Hinch has shown he's not going to push these guys. You know, nobody's going to see the eighth inning here for quite some time, right? So these first month or two, once or twice a week, Kenta Maeda pitching, you know, the fifth, sixth, and seventh or something, that couldn't work. I think that could work. Now, maybe they'll have Reese Olson do it. But personally, I would lean toward the vet on the short contract and say, hey, this is what you're doing. But again, it's a long season and they have six starters. Okay. Someone's going to miss a handful of starts, hopefully nothing major, but you know what's going to happen. Someone's going to tweak a hamstring. Someone's going to have a dead arm phase. And, everybody's going to get their starts. I would find a way to keep all six in the majors because I think they're six of their better pitchers. I think there's no reason, unless they really believe they have to keep one stretched out down in Toledo. But put it this way. If everything goes well, how many Detroit pitchers make 28 or more starts this year? You got
one.
One?
What? I mean, yeah.
Who would that be? Your one?
Yeah, like I guess I'm hoping it's Skubal, but
yeah, exactly. We all hope it's Skubal.
Hope. Yeah.
But you know, he's never shown that on the big league level, right? And so that's asking a lot. So no one's gonna make 28 or more starts, more than likely. I would be surprised. How many are gonna make 25 or more starts? Two? Maybe three?
I mean, how many last year?
Yeah. So again, you know, as one of our, I'm sorry if I forget his name, but one of our commenters here said it's not a big deal not making the opening day roster. Injuries will happen, and that was for the lineup. But the same goes in spades for the rotation, right? All six of these guys, if they're healthy, will get their opportunities. I have no doubt. And then who knows, you know, maybe a trade happens. I mean, a lot of other things could come about too, but it's a long season and it's a really great thing that they have six starters who we view as competent and a couple more in the minors like Ty Madden and maybe Wilmer Flores or somebody else who might get close here soon.
Every pitcher on the 40-man roster will be used this year, and there will be some not on the 40-man like Ty Madden who will be put on the 40-man and used this year. Do you know who made the second most starts last year for the Tigers at 19?
Probably someone not very good.
Joey Wentz. Joey Wentz, what? E-Rod made 26 starts. Wentz made 19.
Yeah.
So there's a low bar there to clear in terms of game started.
And I think the way Hinch manages, I don't think he cares. I don't think he's going to care that much. I think that he's going to just use whoever's healthy in the moment and piece together nine innings and win and hopefully win ball games that way. And he's shown it in the past that he can do it. You know, the days are over right now, unless the game makes some major structural changes. You know, the starter's not going to go eight innings and the fireman's coming to put out the fire in the ninth anymore. We're going to see four or five pitchers every night. We've been seeing that for a long time. I mean, I'm not breaking any news here. So, you know, they got six good starters. Be happy. It's not a bad problem. Whoever doesn't get the nod on opening day this week, that's okay.
Hey, moving on to the bullpen, Deadly Ninja Beast, does Wentz make the team? Cool. So we have Lang, we have Foley, we have Chafin, we have Shelby Miller.
Brisky.
Well, those first four are, I guess, guaranteed. And then we have Brisky, we have Vest, we have
and now we're fighting Wentz, for the last.
We have Fido.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so, Wentz or Fido, right? I mean, that's really what we're coming down to.
Yeah. So are we locking in, or we have Holton. Holton's the fifth guy, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So we have two spots for Wentz, Fido, Vest, Drew Anderson.
Yeah.
Wentz and Fido, I guess, are the last two. Or no, Wentz and Brisky are the last two. And Fido's in AAA, probably being stretched out. Or I guess in your scenario, you'd like Olsen to have one of those last spots, Olsen Mize.
I keep the 13 best pitchers if I can. I mean, if it makes any sense at all. Now, one thing Wentz has going for him, right, is if he doesn't make the team, he's gone. They don't have an option on him. So that might just be enough. If he's showing anything here in these last couple weeks, that might be enough where it tilts the scale in his favor. I wouldn't personally do that. I think you go by who you think is the most talented pitcher and you go with him, but that's not always how it goes.
Yeah. Did Wentz give up a home run today or was that yesterday? I believe it was. They gave up a lot of home runs today. Zach Short hit a grand slam today. So
yeah, he did. Brisky, I think Drew Anderson had a rough day. They gave up five runs.
Yeah.
But Brisky threw two shutout innings, struck out a couple guys. So,
yeah, he came
I like Bo Brisky. I think Bo Brisky has a future. I really do. He's the kind of guy I'm rooting for.
So, yeah, I guess Brisky, and then I guess I see Wentz making team because I don't see the Tigers wanting to give up a lefty with starter upside on waivers. So.
Probably a fair bet. You know, I think at the end of the day, that might be enough to just, like I said, it tips the scales to him.
Hey, so yeah, do you have any other roster predictions, anything roster related?
No. I think, you know, the big thing is as we go into the season, we'll talk more about this. We got a couple big episodes coming up with Roger and Chris, later this week as we approach opening day, and I'm sure we'll talk about the roster and what some possible arcs of the season look like. But, you know, just before we get to that, the ongoing conundrum of Javi Baez will be the soap opera for the season. But luckily, you know, in years past when this team was really bad, that would have just taken up all the oxygen in the room, right? What are we going to do with Javi Baez? Oh, he sucks. And you could just hear the Twitter back and forth would be brutal. But now we have Riley Green to watch, and we can, you know, is he going to stay healthy? Is he going to progress into a star? Is Torkelson going to get even better than he was last year and shake off the rust of this horrible spring and, you know, be a guy who hits 35 homers every year? Colt Keith as a rookie, what's that going to look like? Tarek Skubal, building off that long run, you know, decent run of last year, can he make that into a full season thing? Parker Meadows, as we just discussed, is he really a center fielder with that athleticism that can be a part of a winning baseball team? There are a lot of good stories for this roster this year. And so it's a shame that, you know, 30% of the time we talk might be about Javi Baez. And the fact is, if Javi Baez hits, I'll be honest, if he could just hit 220 and play great defense, you're probably, that's the best they're going to do out of him. I don't know if he can do that. We'll see, but because he's not going to have a 300 on base. Can he show a little bit of power, make some plays in the field, and you just kind of go on with it? I just don't see them biting the bullet and eating the contract anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, we have to remember in 22, he had a 92 WRC plus, and with his fielding, that made him close to a 2.5 WAR player.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he can hit anywhere close to league average, he'll be productive. Yeah, let's just say hitting isn't the only thing that makes a player productive. He's a good base runner, and he's a good fielder. So if he's anything close to league average with hitting, he's a plus player.
Did I hear something today? I heard something somewhere where they were going to take an organizational wide approach to finding a solution for Javi Baez or something like that. I have to look that up. But it's like they're putting on an all points bulletin from the top of the org to the bottom for who has an idea to help him hit. That's what it sounded like to me.
I don't see how, what, he's 12 years into his MLB career. I don't see what changes could be made to just make him a better hitter. I don't see it personally, but.
A guy who calls himself YouTube user, very creative name, says, bold prediction, Javi DFA by July. Hey, on the grand spectrum of possible outcomes, that's on there. I mean, that's possible. I mean, if he comes out and let's say he's hitting .150 on the 4th of July and Ryan Kreidler's having, you know, like the year he had 2 years ago, where he's hitting really well and showing some power and being a glove man. Okay, maybe. I mean, it could happen. And I mean, what does Chris Illich want to do? I mean, how big of a check does he really want to write to a player who's no longer in the organization? That Chris Illich's intent might trump everything that Javi Baez does or doesn't do on the field. I mean, if Chris Illich says, no way am I going to write that check for a guy who's not here, then Javi Baez is going to be here. But if he decides, hey, I've seen enough, I got to get rid of this problem, and I'm willing to write the check, then that changes everything.
Yeah, I'll put an asterisk next to that. It's if the Tigers are within striking of the AL Central. I don't think if they're 15 games back, they'll care about DFAing Javi. But I could see that happening if they're within striking distance of the AL Central. I think that's everything we had to go over tonight.
Yes.
And
obviously it was obstruction.
Yes.
So let's talk about that a little bit.
Here's my question. My first question is, so he's clearly blocking the bag
with his left foot.
He has the ball at the start of Kelly's sliding animation.
Yeah.
So if that's at home plate, then he's been considered out because the catcher has the ball. There's no need to make room for him to slide because he's going to be out. Catcher has the ball. So do you think the umpire I guess, do you think that umpire made the right call calling this obstruction, even though the ball beat him there by a large margin?
By the strict letter of the rule, the umpire is on okay ground there. And let's back up for just a second. Again, we should probably just, for the folks who are new and don't know anything about us, I'm an umpire. I do high school baseball and 14-year travel baseball. That doesn't make me an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I do know the rules better than a lot of people. Okay. So what I can tell you there is this is not a new rule. MLB wants them to enforce the rule far more strictly than they used to. For the last 100 years in baseball, that play today never offended anybody. Okay. Carson Kelly is out every single time and everybody goes back to the dugout and everybody's happy, move along with their day. But MLB wants to increase offense and limit injuries. So they want to crack down on blocking the base. As you can see on this angle, his foot there is in front of the base and he does not have the ball. By strict definition of the rule, he broke the rule. Okay. Cause he was blocking the base without the baseball. It doesn't matter that the slide hadn't come in yet, because you could argue if you wanted to, Kelly had to change where he had to go because the base was blocked. So in the past, you could block that base without the ball as long as the ball was kind of in the vicinity of being caught. And there's no strict definition of that, but it was basically umpire judgment. They were going to let that block go. Whether you had your knee down or your foot there, it doesn't matter. But now you have to, especially if this guy's your umpire, you better have that ball in your hand before anything blocks the base, or you better be straddling the base and allow a clean slide into the bag. So
should his foot have been just stayed right there, right where it was, that wouldn't be considered interference.
Right there, I'd say he's fine. I would be stunned if they would have called it there. It's that next little half step he takes right there.
Right. Yeah.
Now he's in front of the base.
Deliberately do it.
Yeah. And most people do. I mean, it's again, for the last 100 years, the second baseman or shortstop on a play like that would put their foot there and try to limit the slide, the ability of the runner to get to the base. A lot of people you see put their knee down and block the whole thing. And it, umpires gave these guys a lot of leeway in terms of was the ball actually in their glove when they started the blocking motion. Okay. As long as it was close, people said good enough, you know, and it was kind of an agreed upon thing. Both teams knew it. But now MLB has said, we're going to strictly enforce this to open up that lane and not have injuries and create more offense. But it's a good thing that this play happened in spring training and it's getting a lot of publicity online, because now they're going to see, you know, how far do they really want to take this? I think that was too far. I think that can't be the standard. If it is, it's going to be a long year. I think personally, it's the block, getting down on one knee and blocking the base and you don't have the ball. I think that could go and nobody would miss that being not a part of baseball anymore. That would be my line. Not so much the feet, but the, you know, putting down the whole knee and shin in front of the bag.
It's weird that this was the first time it's been called this spring, because, I mean, we watched the Tigers do drills for it before they even started playing spring training games.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that if they wanted to, like, nail it into players' heads, that they weren't more strict during the spring to try and make it so it wasn't happening as much during the regular season. But, yeah, you could tell Carson Kelly even looked upset that it was called interference, because he's a catcher. He's going to have to be dealing with plays like that. So yep. I didn't like the call. But
for 100 years or more, that was a perfectly legal play. Today was the first day it was illegal. So we'll see how – hopefully it does not stay illegal very long and they get the umpires together and decide, you know, this is how we're going to fix this. Now, a lot of it was – we haven't seen it yet. A lot of this rule was emphasized because of what's happening on pickoff plays at first and first baseman blocking the bag on runners coming back, you know, trying to hold runners on. first baseman are getting very good at blocking the bag with the whole lower part of below the knee. They want to get rid of that. So we'll see how much of that we see this year.
Should be a fun year because there were a lot of pitch clock violations in the Seoul series that seemed a little weird. But it's still spring training, I guess. So we got one more week today. Next week, we'll probably be live at the same time going over opening day. So finally, real baseball being played.
Cannot wait. It's going to be here.
But yeah, keep an eye out on our Twitter, Motor City Metrics on Twitter. We should be going live Sunday, Monday, with our season predictions. Then we'll probably talk about the Ohtani stuff and other MLB wide stuff sometime at the start of next week. And then again, we will be live after opening day next Thursday. Anything else before we go?
No, I don't think so. Just getting excited. You know, it's always great to get the spring training wrapped up and over with. Spring training is fun, except it's not as fun as real baseball. So let's get it here and let's go.
I'm so over spring training. Well, that'll do us here at Motor City Metrics. Follow us on Twitter. We're close to 5,500 followers. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We're close to, I believe, 2,000 on YouTube. Motor City Metrics on both. But yeah, other than that, have a great night. Have a great night. And it looks like Oakland is winning 79-76 with 4 seconds left. So,
oh, my goodness.
Oakland might pull off an upset. So.
Go Okies. What are they called? I don't even know.
I don't know either.